Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Minding you too.
This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 head-on. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody. Welcome aboard Foxed Up for, well, what, the one show of the week. Oh, well, things happen. Oh, there's been so much going on, and, you know, I got a backlog of music. Most of it from David, but I'm sorry, mate. It ends up getting pushed off another day, but I think you'll understand. We're going to do some music for Mr. Isaac Hayes today because, well, I'm sorry, we lost a huge one. And a master of production. You know, I'm not going to say too much. The music speaks for itself, and, you know, a whole other generation got to know him, you know, as chef in South Park, and we have some of that as well. and, you know, when I first found out that he had been found, you know, next to his, treadmill machine or whatever, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine who, you know, still works in the music business, and he said, "See? Exercise, it'll kill you every time." And I said, yeah, that'd be right. The only part I couldn't understand with him was the Scientology thing, but hey, you got to forgive people for things sometimes. I unfortunately only have actually a best of his, so I went through there and grabbed a couple of things. And the first one I just reckon is such a great example of his use of production. And the one thing about his production that I always got a sense of is you always felt the room that they were in and that the room could handle a certain amount of energy and his amazing use of, I don't know, not using that energy as use of dynamics, and you could just kind of hear the room breathing in the background. Probably has something to do with the era of most of the recordings. But this one, I just, because it just holds back and holds back, the restraint shown in the arrangement, I just think is amazing. So, Mr. Isaac Hayes, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, roll it, Bob.
I'm talking about the power of love now. I'm going to tell you what love can do. You know when they say love makes the world go round, that's the truth. Now I want your imagination. I want you to travel with me. Oh, come on, come on, come on. This young man was raised in the hills of Tennessee. When he reached the age of maturity, he moved to the West Coast. And he fell in love when he got out there to this young girl. And then the inevitable came engaged and they were married. Oh, the power of love was upon him. But you see, girls, I don't mean to come down on you. But this man loved this woman so he could see no wrong, no, no, no. He spent his last dime on the woman because he loved her. And you know, girls, you can take love and kindness sometimes for weakness. And she took it for granted. And she tripped out on it. See, nobody gonna believe what you tell them, no way. Fool. Oh, yeah, girls, you do like that sometimes. But one day, old boy got sick, and he had to come home. I don't have to tell you what he found. Oh, it hurt him so bad. He said, baby, mama, why? That's all he could say. But she said, oh, go on, fool, you doing it. But the man wasn't doing it, but that's the only excuse she could give him. He said, Mama, I can't take it. I got to leave you. I'm going to leave you. Well, she tried to straighten up. She said she was going to straighten up. She got a little job to help him out with the bills, too. But that was just a sham. Because he found it again and again. And seven times he left this woman. And seven times he came back. And he had taken all that he could stand. And the eighth time that this went down, he said, Mom, I got to go. He said, I'm leaving my heart right here. Oh, I don't want to go, but I got to leave you, Mama. And he's going down the highway. I guess it was around 3:30 in the morning. He could hardly see the road, the tears in his eyes. He could barely see the sign, the red on the side of the road. The next town, 125 miles away. And these very words came into his mind. He said, by the time she'll be rising, oh, and she'll find a note I left hanging on the door. She'll laugh when she reads the part that says I'm leaving. Cause I've loved that girl so many times before. Oh, she'll probably stop at lunch just to give her sweet goodbye a call. Oh, she'll hear the phone keep right on ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing, oh, and ringing off the wall. Mama, 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 that's all. And by the time I get to Oklahoma, she'll be sleeping. She'll turn softly in her restless sleep. Just to think I would believe, but time after time after time after time and time again, I tried to tell her so, but she was a non-believer.
Talk about, you know, just sounding like it was expensive. In the chat room, ELO mentions a very story that I had for today. And, you know, we've spoken about this before, and, you know, David from Maine made a comment saying, oh, is it just rehashing old news? But I don't actually agree with that. We've talked about the dead zones in various parts of the world's oceans before. And, you know, we keep hearing about it because it continues to happen, and it's continuing to get worse. And, you know, just because it's, you know, might be considered in some ways old news doesn't mean that the damage still isn't happening, which is still current news. So I don't see it as just rehashing content. Because this is a huge problem, you know, and again, it comes down to our use of fertilizers, mostly. But at livescience.com, and I do agree with David, though, that the New York Times should credit where they get some of their stuff from, when they take it from places like Live Science. You know, and this is just another study, again, just reaffirming what we have known for a while. Parts of the world's oceans are running low on oxygen, a new study finds. Like we've written, I've read a bunch of articles that have started with that very statement. Fertilizers and other chemical pollutants in river runoff fuel blooms of algae that cause oxygen levels to dip when they die. A review of research into the so-called dead zones detailed in the August 15th issue of the journal Science finds that the number of dead zones has roughly doubled every decade since the 1960s. The study authors Robert Diaz and Virginia Institute of Maine Science and Rutger Rosenberg of the United States, the University of Gothenburg in Sweden tallied 405 dead zones in coastal waters worldwide today, affecting about 95,000 square miles of ocean, an area about the size of New Zealand. While that may seem small compared to the total coverage of the oceans, the local effects can be devastating to marine ecosystems. These dead zones occur when fertilizer runoffs dump excess nutrients such as nitrogen and phosphorus into coastal waters, providing food for algae. When these microscopic plants die and sink into the ocean bottom, bacteria feed on them and subsequently consume all the oxygen dissolved in their water. And so, you know, this ends up happening, you know, down, you know, the, in the Gulf of Mexico and whatnot, and it's just hugely bad. You know, there's no fish to be fished, because there's not enough oxygen to support life. You get to this point where it only supports as much of this microorganism down at the bottom as it possibly can, and it stays there. So, I mean, this is a continuing problem, and, you know, this is a perfect example of where, you know, for those that might even doubt some of the science behind global warming, if we do what the environmental community says, is it necessarily a bad thing? Even if there are some inaccuracies. And so, you know, if we stopped using chemical fertilizers, which really, if you rotate crops and do things properly and not try and just get these ridiculous yields out of it, we wouldn't be creating this damage. And you cannot tell me that undoing the damage wouldn't make up for, you know, any profit loss. In the horn section, we were speaking of carbon tax cap and trade systems. You know, it's everybody's responsibility to take care of the whole thing. So, you know, this is just another one of those examples. You know, if we go to better forms of farming instead of this chemical-based stuff, we would have more organic matter to actually absorb carbon, for one. That's actually a major gain. But we wouldn't be having these runoff problems like we do now. And we wouldn't be using Monsanto Frankenfood seeds, but that's a whole other story. But we're going to get back to some music here, and we couldn't cover Mr. Hayes if we didn't go here, because we just have to go here. I can't believe I couldn't find the CD, so I ripped this off of YouTube, and it seemed to be a pretty good copy. So Isaac Hayes as Chef. Doing chocolate salty balls or salty chocolate balls, all depending on, I've seen it listed both ways. So this is Isaac Hayes' Chef from the South Park film. Roll it, Bob.
Tablespoons of cinnamon and two or three egg whites, a half a stick of butter melted. Stick it all in a bowl, baby. Stir it with a wooden spoon. Mix in a cup of flour. You'll be in heaven soon. Say, everybody, haven't seen my balls? They're big and salty and brown. If you ever need a quick pick-me-up, just stick my balls in your mouth. Ooh, suck on my chocolate salted balls. Stick them in your mouth and suck them. Suck on my chocolate salted balls. They're packed full of vitamins and good for you. So suck on my balls. Unsweetened chocolate and a half a cup of brandy, and throw in a bag or two of sugar and just a pinch of vanilla. Read up the cookie sheet, 'cause I hate when my balls stick. Then preheat the oven to 350 and give the spoon a Ever seen my balls? They're big and salty and brown. If you ever need a pick, pick me up. Just stick my balls in your mouth. Suck on my chocolate salted balls. Put them in your mouth and suck them. Suck business. High in fiber. Hey, wait a minute. What's that smell? It smells like something burning. Well, that don't confront me none. Long as I get my rent paid on Friday. Baby, you better get back in the kitchen. Cause I got a sneaking suspicion. Oh, man, baby. Baby, you just burned my bowl! My bowl's on fire! Somebody spill it!
That's just silly. Anyway, we lost a good one, Isaac Hayes. Yes, I gotta agree with ELO. You know, I he did lose me a bit with the Scientology thing, but hey, you know, he did have enough of a sense of humor to do South Park in the first place. So, you know, hey, what are you gonna do? We're gonna go to the phones, and we got a couple people waiting, but we'll go to Gene first. Our news ninja, Gene. How you going, mate?
I haven't heard that in forever. That was great. Well, the reason I called in, since we were talking about the bees and the monetary businesses and such, I got a chance tonight when I went to the peak oil meeting to see the 11th hour.
And right.
There was a statistic in there that basically said if we charge for all that nature does for us now for free, it would end up about $35 trillion.
Sweet.
And it's like, and it's weird because just last week I sent you this article about the human bees in China. They had people painting pollen onto the trees there because there weren't enough bees and things to, pollinate.
It's a massive thing if we lose bees. I mean, I can't emphasize it enough. For food alone, it's unbelievably huge. And I think what you're saying there is, you know, we have to actually put the dollar value on actually, you know, Mother Nature and the planet and the resources that it provides us, and include that into the equation and actually, you know, assert some value to it, which we don't at the moment.
Well, at this point, I'm so paranoid anymore with everything that is going on. I'm almost, I hate to say this, but I'm almost paranoid to think enough that maybe that was the idea all along. So basically, if we killed off nature enough, the business would have to take over and charge us all for, I'm sorry.
No. And, you know, I mean, I try and speak all positive about, you know, the fact that we're having discussions here about a carbon trade system and, you know, actually coming up with targets. However, you know, while I say that, I should actually say that, you know, there's plenty of time for them to completely screw this up. Right.
Yeah.
You know, they
yeah.
can. I'm hoping that they get something that they can build on, but it has as much the potential to turn into something that's just a complete joke, and ends up giving the industries that should least be given it free rein, and it could end up being horrible, and I'll be screaming up and down about that, you know, in 2 years' time.
Well,
but you know,
go ahead.
You know, so, I mean, I just, we just have to kind of wait and see here at the moment. But, you know, it's amazing, you know, here I'm thinking, you know, we're finally going to start putting together this policy. And then you realize that, you know, the other side is not going to come to the table and be part of it. They're just going to play ante because it's all that they've got. And now this thing's yet again being used as a political football. And, you know, I forgot that there would be this, like, you know, the last stand for the Alamo kind of thing.
Well, like, go ahead.
No, go ahead, mate.
Well, I was going to say, I would hope they wouldn't be this stupid to look at it like a money-making point, because I trust nature to keep doing what it's supposed to be doing. I don't trust humankind to be that regular. And with that, I'll let you go to your next caller. But, you know, that statistic of $35 trillion, I think, a year, I think...
Easy. It would have to be easy, that. You know, I mean, you look at any plant and you realize that, you know, if you burn down a tree and the pile of ash that would be left behind would be all that actually came from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of that tree had actually been built by sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to realize what an unbelievable undertaking that is. And that happens, you know, it happens time and time again all over this planet. And we don't see the value or see the wonder and amazement in that.
Yeah.
I think that's missing the point just grotesquely.
Definitely. And I'll catch you later.
All right, mate. Thanks, Gene.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you soon. And that was our news ninja, Gene, who sent me actually a whole bunch of the stuff that we've got for tonight. But before we do that, can't play homage to someone like Isaac Hayes without having David ring in. How you going, David? Welcome to the program.
Good evening, John. Long time no talk yet.
Yeah. you know, it's been one of those runs lately. What can I say?
What can I do
for you?
Well, you know, I was just going to speak on Isaac Hayes. You know, people need to realize, they always forget, John, they always forget, but they need to realize that Isaac Hayes, when he became a solo star, that happened by accident. Accident. Wasn't meant to be a solo artist. Wasn't planned. He was always going to be a staff writer at Stax.
Right.
I mean, Hayes, and I'll give it up to David Porter. David Porter, one of the greatest lyricists of all time. Isaac Hayes wrote the music, kind of like the same setup of like Bird Bacharach and Hal David, same kind of legendary catalog that they had. They wrote for Carla Thomas, Otis Redding, Wilson Pickett, and they did 85% or 70% of the work of Sam and Dave. So that right there, people, that right there put Isaac in legend category, game over. He could have left the game. He could have said, I'm done. I demolished all of you. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
But he didn't do that, see? What happened next is just the talk of legends. What happened next was, go ahead.
No. I mean, I always think of him as just an amazing arranger, producer. Just, you know, that's always been the tying line.
Mm.
You know, when it just has a really good sense of that was always my impression. Everything that he ever did, you know, and even like the Sam and Dave stuff, you know, there was always a real sense of space in everything. And and it's actually something that you don't hear very much anymore, and it's purely because of the way technology has infiltrated the process. And you know, it was an orchestra in a proper recording room, you know, just really organic and just gorgeous production. Just really gorgeous production.
I would say
over the top, really over the top sometimes.
I would say he was the Mozart of soul. He ushered in the Romantic era, the epic symphonic soul. And another thing a lot of people don't realize is the fact that when he came out on the scene, if you saw the visuals of what he did, the fact that what was groundbreaking about him on the visual side was he took the chains aspect of slavery, and when he wore those chains, that was the aspect of he's free now.
Yeah.
He had that lineage in his parents.
I guess. For people who thought that Mr. T came up with that whole thing, no, Mr. T got it from Isaac Hayes, probably.
Yeah, probably Isaac Hayes. And like I said, I have pretty much his entire catalog. Tell you what, John, one of these days you're going to have to play his version of Fragile. I'll have to send it to you. Well, actually, I don't have to send it to you because I already sent it to you.
I have to just go and get it. You're just making me think of something else. No, but I would like to play that. Have you heard, since I have you, about this young 21-year-old Australian bass player that Jeff Beck is cruising around with at the moment?
Tal Wilkenfeld. She's amazing.
Oh, my word. She slid under my radar, and Gail stumbled across her the other day. Now, folks, you know, I mean, we're talking Jeff Beck here. We're talking, you know, up on the level of God. And this guy has been touring lately not even with a bass player. He's preferred a keyboard player who could play bass on keyboards. And then pops up, I saw footage of, it's Tal and, is it Vinnie Caliuta? No. But one of those drummers that played on Steely Dan's Asia. Just in trio. No. It wasn't Gad.
Clinic drummers. Just say that. Clinic drummer.
Yeah. One of them guys.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm just sitting there looking at this, you know, like 21-year-old girl who dropped out of school at like 14. With these teeny little hands just running rampant on that instrument. She's going to be someone to watch. And I went and checked out some of the tracks on her solo album that she did when she was the ripe age of 20.
Yeah.
And it's frightening jazz. Unbelievable.
She's an amazing talent. I'll send you that quick.
I just sat there and you know, Scott and I always joke that Jeff Beck is actually the archetype for Nigel in Spinal Tap.
You know what? I think Christopher Guest he did say that in an interview. He's a hybrid of that, a juxtaposition as well. The other part of Nigel is Ron Wood, without a doubt.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
you know, just going back to Isaac Hayes, we talked about the music, but now we can talk about the conspiracy. Yeah, my own.
Okay, you say that now.
I'm serious, Don.
Am I right to understand that he was in the early workings of a film with Bernie Mac, and they die within like 3 days of each other?
Oh yeah, but here's a conspiracy. That's not the conspiracy. The conspiracy is, the rumor is, the gossip is, because I don't know it to be true. But if I listen, people, if I read it on the internet, it must be true, right? So apparently Isaac Hayes had gone back to Matt Stone in tears, saying, "Listen, guys, listen. I wanted to be on the show as much as I could, but they made me quit." Now, notice he said they made me.
Oh, right. Okay.
He said they made me quit. He was crying, literally crying, and they just couldn't believe it. They didn't know what to do. But he had made his bed and he lied in it. But you know, it does point to something that people don't think about, which is when you said the treadmill, I thought you were going to go there, so I'll jump in there. When you said the treadmill, Isaac Hayes died on his treadmill. Now, here's where you can connect things. If you know anything about Scientologists, you know they have monitors. around them 24/7.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
He was on his treadmill. When the paramedics got there, guess what? The monitors weren't around.
Ah.
No one's talking anything about it. Now am I saying, in case we have some Scientologist stalkers out there, am I saying that the Exono worshippers killed him by neglecting to help him? No, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is, where the F were you guys?
Some with minders like these, who needs enemies?
Exactly.
I actually hadn't heard that bit. It was just when I read in one of the early pieces after Hayes went, saying, you know, and his friend, you know, Bernie Mac, who they were working on this film Soul Man, who died kind of surprisingly young.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, oh, this could be fuel for something. But I didn't hear. I never actually heard anyone make any actual connection behind it. But yeah, there's always room for a Scientology, you know, scare there.
Of course. But the truth is, John, that those guys were literally in his finances and in his accounts. So I'm not saying that the Scientologists helped kill him with the stress that he had to pay these guys constantly. I'm not saying that, but what I am saying is it is rather odd the fact that he was on the treadmill, he slumped over on the treadmill, had the heart attack, and the monitors weren't around, and no one can account for where they were. My feeling is if something did go down, and they knew Isaac was going to make some noise about Scientology in the future, they were going to walk away, John. They weren't going to help.
You know, I can definitely see where you know your brain can go there, because there has been some weird crap when it comes to the Scientology people. And a few days ago down here, they were airing some Oprah special with Tom Cruise's return, not jumping up and down on a lounge, and I was looking at him for a minute, and I'm just going, something just does not look right with that guy anymore. Something in his eyes, he looks kind of gray. I mean, is that higher level thing where you actually turn into an alien?
You know, John, the thing about that is when I was actually over at my parents' house, and I was watching, my mom was like, "You gotta see Oprah! Tom Cruise is on!" And I was like, "I don't think so, this is garbage." And she was like, no, watch him. And I watched him, and I watched how she interacted with Oprah. And when the questions of Scientology came out, he was screaming inside, "Help me, get me out of here, take your film crew with me and away, with me and Katie Holmes, and our baby, we need to get out of here." Because here's what I think, John. Well, that's not actually what I think. It's a pretty good guess. They're in his bank accounts right now as we speak. They're probably like Scrooge McDuck, you know. They're in the money bin and they're swimming around like a duck.
and they're doing heavy math at the moment, because Universal has just dumped his production partner.
Well, you know, John, I keep saying these Scientologists are some of the most dangerous people, and someone brought up the point, why would Isaac Hayes go with that? I'll tell you a very simple reason why Isaac Hayes went with that. It was tragedy in his life. It was a lot of downturns in his life. And when you're in that low period, those people can literally light you up if nobody else is around.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No doubt. I mean, but I mean that's classic with any kind of cult situation. I mean, regardless of what breed it is. That's what they feed on.
Look what
they feed on people.
Look what they're doing to Will Smith.
Are they are the, are Are they playing with him too? They got him already.
They already got him building a school for him.
He's actually one of the few kind of pop culture people that I actually kind of like, and they have to go and fucking bend him too.
Now, if you really want to get conspiracy, what were his movies about?
He's got a lot of alien stuff in there. Oh yeah,
right.
There's a lot of alien stuff in there.
Independence Day was about evil aliens.
Yeah.
I'm not saying.
Men in Black.
Okay,
I'm following you here.
Yeah. I'm saying to people that this is the problem. This is the cancer. Beck is in the same boat. Not Jeff Beck, the other Beck.
Yeah. Beck.
Yeah, he's in the same boat. He won't talk about it either. A lot of people
Beck,
are saying...
Beck, my mom's a Sony CEO.
Oh, is she? I didn't know that.
I think it was one of the labels that got bought up by CBS. Might have been Epic or something, but yeah, he's like offspring or relative of Sony personnel.
Oh.
He's no accident. I like him. I got no problem with him, actually. You know, I mean, I like him for what he does. It's cool. But
oh,
yeah,
I like Beck for one simple reason. I like Beck for one simple reason. He hired Roger Manning and his keyboard. From the Jelly. That's
there's
for me to like him.
Oh yeah. But you know, I mean, he had connects, and I'm not actually using that to take away from him. But he had more connects than people realize.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention was I don't know if you heard about this, but the original steel guitar player of Hank Williams' band died, Hank Helms.
Oh no way.
Yeah.
He must have been getting on.
Yeah, he was seriously, I think he was like 81 or something. One last thing before I get out of here and you get to your stories. Did you catch the news on the Obama jet?
I saw headlines. I didn't actually read the stories. Was this about the scare?
Apparently. Now if you want to talk conspiracies, we can talk conspiracies. Apparently, the Obama jet that they gave him was Hillary's old plane. Whoever set that up. Now, Clinton supporters, don't get mad at me. I'm not saying anything. Just like the Scientologist thing, I'm not saying.
I couldn't even go there and jest. I really, you know, I might have my disagreements with Hillary Clinton, but I couldn't in a million years.
Yeah,
I can hang with the best of them, but sorry,
I'm not saying one of them. I'm not saying it was the Clintons. What I'm saying is whoever gave him that jet that has faulty problems, I look into that person's background. Just saying.
Oh yeah.
Last thing is that there's a new movie coming out September 20th. It's called Battle in Seattle. It's about the World Trade Organization's riot
in
1999. Andre 3000 stars in it. Check this cast. Andre 3000, Ray Liotta, Michelle Rodriguez, and directed and written by Stuart Townsend. So if you get a chance, check the trailer. I think you'd be a...
Yeah, I've known about this film coming up. I knew about this thing being in production. It should be really good because, you know, there sure wasn't coverage like there could have been during all that. I'm curious about that film. Thanks for that, man.
Well, John, until next time, that's all I got for this evening.
All right, buddy. Thanks for that, man. And take care of yourself. And that's our good friend David from Maine. And Bob just sent me a link from Think Progress. And he said, get ready to scream. And, you know, what now? And this is just the lunacy that we've got to get past. I mean, this is just outright stupidity. Limbaugh, U.S. should consume energy like Michael Phelps consumes food. This coming from a big, fat, drug-addled lunatic. Yesterday, press reports revealed that Olympic swimmer Michael Phelps consumes a 12,000-calorie-per-day diet. six times the average calorie intake of a 23-year-old man. On his radio show today, Rush Limbaugh said that since extra energy helped produce excellence in Phelps, drilling for more oil would do the same for the U.S. Oh, fuck's sake. But now we read that Michael Phelps is burning and using... and so here's the quote. But now we read that Michael Phelps is burning and using 12,000 calories a day. While the Democrats are trying to alert everybody to the dangers posed by energy, the Democrats and left are now demonizing oil. They're demonizing our own ability to be energy independent. They don't want us to be able to get our own independent sources of oil or natural gas. Yet look at Michael Phelps. Oh, Bob has the audio. Please, Bob, let's just give everybody the ability to absorb Rush's fat ass and vomit all over their keyboards. Go ahead, run it, please.
I know, ladies and gentlemen, achievers use more energy. High achievers, high producers use a lot of energy. And I have said so with pride. But now we read that Michael Phelps, burning using 12,000 calories a day, while the Democrats are trying to alert everybody to the dangers posed by energy. The Democrats and left are now demonizing oil. They're demonizing our own ability to be energy independent. They don't want us to be able to get our own independent sources of oil or natural gas. And yet, look at Michael Phelps. No citizen of the world, he couldn't care less at those little Chinese gymnasts or rice cakes. He's out there saking up more than his fair share, more than he needs. This is pure gluttony. This is typical in the world of Obama of what the United States has become. See, ladies and gentlemen, American consumption, when it results in exceptionalism in athletics, why, that's perfectly fine. Why, that's, we celebrate that kind of consumption. American consumption for the greatest production, for the greatest reward, why, that is fine if we do this in sports. However, if we consume and produce exceptionalism in goods and services for others, including ourselves, then somehow we are committing a sin.
Now, notice some of the language that this asshole uses. You know, they're demonizing oil. They're demonizing our own ability to be energy independent. As though the ability to be energy independent is completely tied up in oil and natural gas, which is complete and utter bollocks. Now, you know, consume, the more you consume, what a bunch of shit. Now, Mr. Phelps also happens to get a hell of a lot out of that 12,000 calories a day. He's using it efficiently. There's something represented in the output by his input that is not where we are at as a country or as a world when it comes to resource use. I mean, all these guys who, you know, talk about the power of the markets and all this other crap, how is it that they're able to turn a complete blind eye to the fact that their supply of this stuff is dwindling? You should be looking to find ways to get off of a supply that's dwindling. But no, we just want to continue to ride our ideological horse to oblivion. What a bunch of shit. You know, and to have that fat bastard sit there and try and, you know, equate this position of excellence and all that and relate that to an elite athlete, which that fat piece of shit is about as far as you can get away from an elite athlete. I mean, I don't even care about the damn games. I mean, we're talking food energy as opposed to, you know, digging crap out of the ground that's killing us as fast as we burn it. What a moron. What a moron. Speaking of the Olympics, let's see. I don't know if you've heard, but an Australian reporter was detained for filming a protest in Beijing. He was had his passport taken away. He wasn't there to cover the protest. He just happened to be there as part of the media, and a protest broke out, as they do. And it seems as though the police over there haven't gotten the message that it's supposed to be an open Olympics, you see. So they're no surprise saying one thing, doing another. And I've been seeing a couple of threads around. One was at the Huffington Post, one was at Crooks and Liars. Dealing with shock horror, NBC's lying to us, and live events are being broadcast 15 hours after they happened, and we're being told it's live. You gullible bunch of morons, you're just catching on to this now. And I'm laughing. I'm just thinking it's absolutely hysterical. And where some folks are saying, hey, you know, the Canadian Broadcasting Company has like 5 channels running, so you can see like everything, you know, not this like insane control thing that NBC's got. And NBC's doing everything they can to like fight every clip from YouTube. I mean, it's just a joke. I mean, you talk about you know, just fighting a losing battle in this modern day and age. The idea that you can realistically expect no footage from an international event to end up viewable on the web. As though you're going to keep it, you know, quiet for 15 hours to, you know, when people can find out the results anywhere. I mean, I keep thinking that, you know, this is just such a sign of how stupid the media really think that we all are. And if they're willing to do this with something like an Olympics, what makes you think that, you know, they're not just going to be completely... having a brain meltdown. I just keep thinking of Rush. What an asshole. I mean, seriously, what an asshole. It amazes me that we can still have people standing up there and saying that gluttonous consumption is something to be admired. And to be able to take a thing where, a situation where a guy has busted his ass for years to get to the elite level that he's at, it hasn't been driven by consumption. It's been driven by really hard work. And then he had to up the fuel supply. I mean, this is along the lines of the McCain camp attacking Obama for the inflating your tires thing. I still think about that, how, you know, every motoring group is saying, yeah, we could save 3%. Just like that. Bang. If everybody had their tires inflated properly. You know? All those NASCAR dads, hello, cars. NASCAR will tell you the same thing. But yet, Little twist, little turn, little spin. Oh, trying to actually be safe and not waste is somehow stupid and uncool or un-American. I do not understand that. I would think the idea of greatness would come from maybe producing more with less. Just because you produce doesn't mean that it justifies your use. You know, really great example. Okay. Here's one of those things that drives me crazy. Right? Banks constantly talk about, you know, they advertise their products. And I'm sorry, a bank does not produce a damn thing. It doesn't produce anything. But actually, I did figure out what they produce. They produce a whole hell of a lot of waste and trash. I signed up for, I won't name the bank as of yet, but I signed up for a thing called an e-banking account. Thinking, you know, low fees, e-banking, internet banking, low paper. No, let's see. I got my little welcome booklet today. For a bank account that's supposed to be all electronic, I got 9 stapled books about my accounts. Now, I applied for this thing paperlessly. If this is considered good, if this is considered, I mean, I have a stack that's all going to end up in the recycling bin within a week. If that's the idea of, you know, excellence, sorry, I don't buy it. Anyway, time to wrap it up as my brain falls apart. Blah. See, you can tell it's brain poison. Rush is brain poison. I hear Rush and my brain just kind of turns to liquid shit. But thanks for being here today, folks. This is a short week, a one-day week, but we will do better next week. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing. Thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archives and everything that he does. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions for the music. Thanks to Dave and Gene for ringing in. Thanks to Gene and the rest of the News Ninjas and our bloggers and our mods for everything that they do for us. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you next week.
And the sign said, long-haired, freaky people need not apply. So I stuck my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man. I think you do. So I took off my hat, I said, imagine that. That's me, working for you. Membership card to get inside.